Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This talk and Sangha discussion is on the Buddha Sutta. In this sutta, the Buddha teaches that awakening is through wholehearted engagement with the Eightfold Path. This talk was recorded at Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey on June 22, 2017. There is a related article on the website, and if you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. Thank you. Peace.
Tonight's talk is on the Buddha Sutta. In the Buddha Sutta, the Buddha describes the difference between himself and those that follow the Eightfold Path. The Buddha's words, the Tathagata, the Buddha, the rightly self-awakened one is the one who teaches the path previously unknown. Even that first line is important. The rightly self-awakened one. The Buddha uses that line over and over again, referring to himself, but also referring to anyone that would develop the Eightfold Path. It's through our own efforts that we self-awaken. The subtitle of this talk is the self-governing principle of awakening. I mean, it's up to us what we do. His disciples, the Buddha's words, he's continuing, his disciples follow the path and afterwards become awakened from the path. This is the difference. This is the distinction between one rightly self-awakened and a monk discernment release. Discernment release is another word for simply right view. The Buddha became the Buddha, my words now, the Buddha became the Buddha by rightly self-awakening. Upon his awakening, he taught others the Eightfold Path so that they too could rightly self-awaken. You remember in the Nagara Sutta, though, Kevin, that the Buddha refers to the Eightfold Path as part of his awakening. So even during that process of awakening, he was developing the way of teaching others. He was framing that path in his own mind. And that's important too. The Buddha taught in a very direct way that the entity that is commonly believed to be a self is not a self, but merely a combination of physical and mental factors that cling together and create the deluded belief of a permanent self. This belief is founded in ignorance and is best understood as the ego self or ego personality. That's clear to you now, isn't it? Yep, and that's all it means. That's another one of those things that has taken on mystical terms, like there's no such thing as a self, and the self is part of this grand void of emptiness or nothingness. And the Buddha was just using that word to say your views of yourself are wrong views. Let go of the views. They don't constitute a self. It is the impermanent and insubstantial ego personality that the Buddha taught was not a self, but is anatta. There is a great misunderstanding of self and what anatta means. Most modern schools of Buddhism take an extreme nihilistic view of self due to this misunderstanding. This misunderstanding develops from ignoring and misapplying dependent origination and diminishing the importance of the foundational teachings of the Four Noble Truths. So this might help you a little bit. Dependent origination starts from ignorance. The first causative factor of the Eightfold Path. So there's already dependent origination doesn't describe the birth of a physical self or even the birth of the universe, even though it's often applied that way. And it's starting from a point of view of an established reference point. You remember on retreat we talked about when you're finally awakened, the experience of the self is simply a reference point to what's occurring rather than a personal experience of what's occurring? Mm-hmm. So it's from that reference point that ignorance takes hold and changes that reference point from an impersonal reference point to something that's now personal. And that occurs, and this isn't exactly how it would occur, mm-hmm. but just to give a reference point to the beginning of dependent origination, rooted in ignorance, suffering arises. The reason why that's important is that initial ignorance is necessary for suffering to take place, for confusion, deluded thinking, and suffering to take place. So then the next question is, well, where does that ignorance come from? And that's where we get lost, because the only thing that's significant is to recognize ignorance has taken hold. Because it's at that point that we can address ignorance. If we get into the mystical connotations of what came first, the chicken or ignorance, mm-hmm. we get stuck into, well, then there's some value in being the chicken.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And immediately our minds are stuck in some imaginary past reference point that is itself rooted in ignorance. We can't go, if we're trying to escape from ignorance, we have to establish ourselves in that ignorance first, I guess is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And I think what the Buddha is saying, recognize that your views of self and in relation to the world, the three marks of existence, are rooted in ignorance. It's from that ignorance, through these 12 links, that suffering arises. And for the sake of argument, it's best to almost dismiss the links and just recognize, yes, I need a way out of this ignorance. Mm-hmm. Let me develop the Eightfold Path.
Okay.
Because that's really what that should point you to. Okay, I don't understand something.
Mm-hmm.
The way I can understand it is through this very specific curriculum mm-hmm. known as the Eightfold Path.
Mm-hmm.
To put it in much more simpler terms, I don't really understand how to change the oil in my car, but if I take this night class for 3 weeks, mm-hmm. they're going to show me how to do it, and then I'll no longer be ignorant of how to change my oil.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is that direct. And if you come from the point of view that I don't really understand how to change my oil and I'd like to, but I'm going to go to this class to teach me how to bake cakes because the girls are prettier there, you're going to have fun, but you're not going to learn how to change the oil in your car. And it's just that way. What you study, what you put your mind on is what you're going to experience. So, the Buddha awakened to the profound understanding of the nature of dukkha. Dukkha is the Pali word used to describe the common human experience of stress. This includes dissatisfaction, disappointment, disenchantment, ignorance, delusion, confusion, and all manner of physical and emotional pain. In short, the Buddha awakened to an understanding of how suffering and confusion is rooted in ignorance. Ignorance is not merely a lack of right understanding. An aspect of ignorance is a conditioned reaction of the ego self to avoid anything that would challenge the ego's hardened view of itself in the world. And that is the primary component of a conditioned mind, or in other words, confirmation bias. We simply have a strong resistance to seeing anything or to continue to ignore anything that would challenge that ignorant view. And that really is a difficulty that everyone has in developing the Eightfold Path. It's a simple and direct path that is made complicated by our conditioned thinking, not made complicated by the path itself.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why that's important, and it took me, this was maybe one of those, if you want to call it an aha moment, when I was still struggling, even though I was studying the Buddha's direct teachings, I was still struggling to figure out how does this apply. And I remember having a clear thought that my difficulty is because there's an aspect of my thinking that is insisting that I ignore what's right in front of me. And it was almost like, you know, there's one of the sutta where the Buddha talks about the path opening up. It might be the Nagara Sutta. And it was almost like, now I can see how the path is applied. Mm-hmm. I have to mindfully recognize that I have resistance rooted in ignorance. And when that comes up, to simply let it go, to go beyond it, and not let that continue to hold me back. And it's really, but many people talk about that in class. They say it in different terms. Some will say, well, what happens when I let go of all these wrong views? What happens to me? That's that aspect of ignorance coming up and say, I want to ignore what's beyond ignorance. I want to ignore an awakened mind. This aversion to develop realistic views is clinging to an ego personality. Another word or phrase for that is the five clinging aggregates. Remember that when the Buddha describes suffering, he goes through a series and then he concludes with, in short, the five clinging aggregates are dukkha. So the five clinging aggregates aren't the cause of dukkha. They are the personal experience of dukkha. If you want to really understand the nature of dukkha, you have to understand yourself and your own views rooted in ignorance. Five clinging aggregates are dukkha. The need to ignore what is apparent is an active form of ignorance and is often engaged with to avoid the Buddha's teachings that directly challenge the ego. The Buddha realized that from ignorance through 12 causative and observable links, dukkha arises. Dependent origination shows in a very specific way that the ongoing and distracted condition of stress and confusion has as its initial cause ignorance. This is why the Buddha consistently described his teachings as understanding stress and developing the cessation of stress, nothing more. At first glance, that seems like almost too insignificant to put this much effort in understanding stress, until we realize that that is the common human problem, and it's the preoccupation with stress or dukkha that distracts us from living our life moment by moment as our life occurs. That constant struggle to always get what satisfies us and to at all costs to avoid anything that might take away from that satisfaction. And in that struggle, we miss all of life, because all of life is occurring in between that. Those thoughts are always thoughts and actions that are directed towards the past or reacting towards something that has always occurred, and we miss life as life occurs. That's the true aspect of mindfulness. That you understand that is significant. You know, and again, it's not that it's so hard to understand, but we don't want to see that. We don't want to understand that. That one point, I think you've heard me say that the Buddha could nearly have accurately described the first noble truth as there is distraction, as saying there is dukkha, because it is the preoccupation with dukkha that we create ego personalities, we create layers of ignorance between who we are and what's really occurring, and we miss living our entire life. And so you understand in a very professional way what the Buddha understood 2,600 years ago, the debilitating effects of stress. Mm-hmm. It's just now, I mean, now in the last 25 or 30 years, would that be accurate? Mm-hmm. That we're understanding the profound effect that stress has on our physical and mental well-being. And you could really say that most of the ills individually can be related back in some way to stress. Yes. Whether it's directly or the way that we deal with stress, such as drugs and alcohol, food, too much work, too much golf, too much exercise, too much chatter, too much food, all of that, mm-hmm. is a response, a better word is reaction, to stress, to not getting what we want or receiving what we don't want. So I'll go over this part of the talk. The 12 observable causative links of dependent origination are ignorance, mental fabrication. Let me take this in the other way. Ignorance causes or gives rise to mental fabrications. Mental fabrications are dependent on ignorance. Mm-hmm. Mental fabrications gives rise to discriminating consciousness. That's consciousness rooted in ignorance. That's important. Consciousness gives rise to identification as an ego personality. That gives rise to interpreting events through the physical senses, impacted by that consciousness. I'm reading this in slightly different terms than you've seen it. That interpretive consciousness gives rise to establishing clinging through contact with worldly events, and that's an important part. Now, our thinking is already affected by that initial ignorance, and now we're engaging in the world through contact with our senses, with our five physical senses. Anything that comes through those senses is now interpreted by that consciousness rooted in ignorance. In essence, we can't really trust what we're now perceiving. What we're now saying, wow, I really like this, I need more of it. Or, I don't like that experience, I want less of it. And all the other joining to dukkha that we do as a result of that. All of it is clouded by that initial ignorance. All of it is lacking validity because of that initial ignorance. All of it is anatta, not a self, because of that initial ignorance. Is that clear? Mm-hmm. And is that helpful in understanding dependent origination now?
Yeah.
There's a reason why. It's just you and me tonight. Any questions about that?
No. Question is keeping it in mind and remembering that.
This might be easier. It might not. I think you've heard me talk about when you find yourself becoming agitated, and we did talk about this on retreat and other classes, just remind yourself, excuse me, this is not me, this is not mine, this is not who I am. The agitation is occurring because of a misunderstanding of who you are in relation to what's occurring. Another way of saying it is you're now, if there's a disturbance in the mind, and that disturbance isn't necessarily aversion. It could be, I want more of this, taking great excitement in something.
Yeah, attachment.
Yep, this is not me, this is not who I am. at the source, for the last 3 or 4 weeks we've been talking about the wisdom of restraint. At the point of contact is where we practice restraint. And if we can, if we've developed a measure of concentration, we can observe that occurring. We recognize that our mind is becoming agitated. At that point, this is not me, this is not who I am. You're interrupting that joining with the experience. And then what happens, you simply have the, you're simply a reference point to the experience. I'll go back one. So identification as an ego personality gives rise to interpreting events through the physical senses impacted by consciousness. That establishes clinging through contact with worldly events. That gives rise to physical and emotional reactions. And so you can see how this, the explanation is linear, and it takes a little bit of time to even work through it. But what occurs happens almost imperceptibly, instantly. Almost outside of time. And of course it doesn't, it's not outside of time, but it happens so quickly that we can't observe it unless we've developed somewhat of a well-concentrated mind. Again, the reason why we use meditation that way. Once clinging in contact with worldly events has occurred, we have physical and emotional reactions, a disturbance in the mind, and then craving for continual sensual fulfillment arises. And that could be wanting more or wanting less. It's still, it's two sides of the same coin. Clinging and aversion are the same thing. They're wanting something to be different. So maybe even a more direct word, but it leaves out the joining process, would be desire. Because it's desire in any sense. I want more, I want less. That is joining with dukkha. Often the Buddha would describe that process of an agitated mind causing us to join with suffering. Clinging to suffering, the five clinging aggregates, the experience of suffering, form, feeling, perceptions, mental fabrications, and that consciousness that's rooted here. That's all part of, that all relates to dependent origination, and it is, whether we use those terms, it's how we describe ourselves to ourselves. I'm this physical thing having these feelings and these emotions, this is me. And we use that reaction to say this, to reaffirm that this is me. We always, until we've taken ourselves out of the picture, we always describe ourselves in relation to what's occurring as I like this, I like that, I like that person, I don't like that, I don't like the Republicans, I don't like the Democrats, I don't like Mercedes, I like BMWs. We spend our whole lives with that self-identification rather than being in the process of life. And it doesn't mean we don't make choices. We'll make better choices, but they won't be based on an already held view that is rooted in ignorance. From craving for continual sensual fulfillment comes maintaining additional clinging cause, as the cause. Once we've established an ego personality rooted in nothing, the Buddha would use the term like foam on water, there's nothing there. Because of that, we start that ongoing process of continually joining with external objects to maintain the self. And now we're explaining, we're defining ourselves to ourselves. We do it with other people, but we're defining ourselves and describing ourselves in relation to the things we're joined with. And now we're creating a hardened identity, but that hardened identity is itself inherently impermanent and prone to stress. From that continual establishment of an ego personality, phenomenal involvement or attachment to worldly events occurs. And from that attachment, all manner of physical and emotional suffering arises. Dukkha. So, an auspicious night for both of us. Do you see now how from ignorance through those links, we end up at suffering? Through that process, rooted in ignorance, giving rise to assumptions that the assumptions themselves are rooted in ignorance, that gives rise to a ongoing thinking process, meaning consciousness. So the confusion there could be, well, then where did the assumption take take root in. There had to be something there prior to ignorance, and there's where we get stuck. That's the question that can only continue ignorance, because it's a question that is going beyond the subject that's important, is ignorance. Mm-hmm. Acceptance of ignorance. And this is really this is really where the diverting point of what the Buddha taught and what a lot of what has developed after is missing, because they want to explain what came before ignorance. And in doing so, they usually ignore it, the whole process of dependent origination. Mm-hmm. When you study, if you go online and just do a look up dependent origination or dependent co-arising, and I bet you will, it's incredibly surprising how many explanations there are that have nothing to do with the Paticca-Samuppada Sutta. Mm-hmm. Most of them get into this rather involved creation myth that somehow the Buddha's teaching how the physical world came into being, and there's no relation at all, but the interpretations are interesting. Or it's used, especially by one pretty famous teacher, to describe the interdependence, interconnectedness, and the interbeing of all things, as if that's there's some significance to that, to awakening.
You're ignorant of that or something.
Yeah, and it has no bearing on dependent origination. In fact, the understanding that we are in some way interconnected or even interdependent is true, but it doesn't apply. It's like saying green apples are green, and then there's four noble truths. One has nothing to do with the other. You can certainly prove at the physical level. Remember Carl Sagan used to always say, you know, we're all part of star stuff, and there's billions and billions of stars.
Yeah.
Well, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's the essence of a star is the essence of us.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't have any bearing on awakening. It's just a truth of living in the physical world. But many teachers would rather teach understanding interdependence and use that as a way of ignoring Four Noble Truths. And that's exactly what has happened. It's directly what has happened. And that came from not wanting to accept that it's from ignorance suffering arises. Remember on retreat we talked about becoming. That's one of those things that is so important. What does it mean? Well, when you want to adapt the Buddha's teachings to other things, becoming means something different. But as it relates to what the Buddha taught, we become more ignorant and we're prone to suffering. Or we can become awakened through the Eightfold Path and put all of that behind us. I just want to look at one thing. We're talking about a lot that I'm passing over. So, here it is. So the Buddha, this is from the Anguttara Nikaya. It's called the, Adityapattaya Sutta. Rather than teach the doctrine of no self, the Buddha teaches that a self governs an awakening process through a right view of anicca, the self, and the path leading to the cessation of dukkha. These are the Buddha's words. There are three governing principles of awakening. The self, the cosmos, and the Dhamma are the governing principles of awakening. The self is a governing principle of the Dhamma. And how is the self, the cosmos, and the Dhamma the governing principles of awakening? And in this sense, the cosmos is the environment of anicca. Meaning just the everything in the universe, everything that we can perceive is all impermanent. We're living within that impermanent environment. The Buddha's words. A meditator, having found solitude, sitting at the root of a tree or an empty hut, is mindful of not renouncing the world's enchantment for robes or alms or shelter, for mystical states. He reflects thusly, I have gone forth to bring to cessation the entire mass of suffering, of sickness, age, and death, of sorrow, regret, pain, and despair. with myself as the governing principle within the governing principle of the cosmos, of the governing principle of impermanence, I have developed understanding of dukkha through the governing principle of the Eightfold Path. He's speaking directly of how to develop awakening. And that last reference to robes, etc., is reflecting on the things that I have joined with that I'm using to describe myself. My clothes, the food that I eat, the house that I live in, etc. All the modern trappings of being connected to the outside world. It was the common problem during the Buddha's time. It's a common problem today. The Buddha continues, my persistence will continue and not lax. I will remain mindful and clear, my body calm and my mind non-distracted, resting in equanimity. I will abandon clinging to impermanent objects, ideas, and views and develop understanding governed by the Eightfold Path. Again, the self-governing principle, the Eightfold Path. Within the cosmos are those with psychic powers, those clairvoyant, who can read the mind of others and can see vast distances, who can recognize conceit and continued eye-making and the further establishment of the ego self. My persistence will continue and not lax. I will remain mindful and clear, my body calm and my mind non-distracted, resting in equanimity. I will abandon conceit and clinging to impermanent objects, ideas, and views, and develop understanding governed by the Eightfold Path. That reference to clairvoyant and psychic powers, and the Buddha's diminishing that, because that was often used even during the Buddha's time to say, well, that's a special person. The Buddha's saying there's nothing special about that. They're just acquired skills that anybody can develop. Mm-hmm. There's some schools of Buddhism that will say that if you want to show that you're awakened, you have to have clairvoyant powers. And the Buddha's saying that's just not true. Mm-hmm. It's just the opposite. The Buddha continues, the Dhamma is clearly taught by the Buddha to be developed here and now. The Dhamma is timeless in nature, meaning that it persists during impermanence, and is for all who would develop understanding. I would be foolish to dismiss this Dhamma in favor of another Dhamma. My persistence will continue and not lax. I will remain mindful and clear, my body calm and my mind non-distracted, resting in equanimity. I will abandon conceit and clinging to impermanent objects, ideas, and views, and develop understanding governed by the Eightfold Path. There's a little more to this, but I think that made the point. You know, the many religions are taught that if you act a certain way and usually do some certain rituals, at some point you'll gain your reward. And all of that may be true. The reason why I'm saying that is the Buddha is talking about developing lasting peace and happiness in this lifetime, right now. And that's what the Eightfold Path develops. It's not a salvific teaching, although it's saving our own lives in this lifetime. And the Eightfold Path is a path to be developed beginning in this present moment and to be developed to the point of awakening. Through our own efforts, the Buddha said, and says repeatedly, a rightly self-awakened one, and that we do the same thing. It's through our own efforts. And there's no other way to do it. Yes. In other words, we can do all the good acts. And again, I'm not diminishing being a compassionate human being, which is often a substitute even within Buddhism as the path, but usually in religion too, that if you act a certain way, you'll go to heaven. Yeah. Which, again, may be true, but it doesn't do anything for recognizing ignorance. So it is developed in the Eightfold Path, rooted in meditation, but including all eight factors of the Eightfold Path that develop awakening. So that's the end of the talk. Any questions or comments?
Yes. So simple and so straightforward. Something to aspire to, you know, something that I think we can do.
Yeah, that's the key, to understand that it's humanly possible. This isn't something that is for someone else or you need special powers. It just takes right effort. The sixth factor of the Eightfold Path guides that. You know, we just have to put our time in.
Yeah.
movement. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was thinking about this maybe earlier today, I think. Question came up from a student, what's the most important part of the Eightfold Path? And there really isn't one most important. You have to meditate, but you can't overemphasize meditation. And it's not just meditation. If you meditate without the other factors, you're likely just going to continue to condition a conditioned mind, because you have no way of referencing what's really occurring. Without right view, there's no initial direction. Without right intention, there's nothing that focuses that direction. Without right speech, right action, right livelihood, we really have no way of recognizing self-referential views rooted in ignorance. And the concentration factors continue to support that mindfulness of the Eightfold Path. This is another sutta. The reason why I come back to this sutta a lot is because of the emphasis that he continues to put on the Eightfold Path as the path. You know, we can't lose the path. We can't lose sight of the fact that if we want to awaken and practice what the Buddha taught, we need to practice his path. It's really that simple. Well, any other questions or comments? Oh, okay.
Know about the path.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's made all the difference. For years and years and years, I struggled for... I mean, I don't even know what I was looking for, because it wasn't... I was looking for finding a way to develop peace and happiness, but I didn't really even understand that until I came across this. And then I realized I almost had to find it to know what I was looking for, I guess is what I'm saying. And I think that's true for everyone. It's one of the difficulties. The students that I have, the ones that have the most difficulty in developing the Buddhist teachings are the ones that have put a lot of time in modern Buddhist schools. The ones that come to this without any of that are the ones that seem to have the least difficulty in developing it. And it makes sense, because your mind is conditioned. I had a hard time. Yeah, I added just the fact that the Four Noble Truths are the foundation for everything the Buddha taught was difficult. Because even though I had heard of it, it was, I don't know that anybody ever spent the time to teach me, even though I had a lot of so-called famous teachers. Even the ones that mentioned it, it was almost in passing. And treated just that way. It's not, you know, well, yeah, the Buddha said that there's suffering, you know, and this is how we deal with it. We do 1,000 prostrations a day, or, you know, we do this chant, and that's how we overcome suffering. Never directing me to accept responsibility that it was my own ignorance that was causing the confusion, delusion, and suffering. Mm-hmm. And it seems like so many people want to ignore that. We want to ignore our own responsibility, and maybe that's why it's so difficult. And that's one of the things I think about. Why is it so difficult for people to accept this? Because we don't want to really accept responsibility for ourselves. It's much easier to put it on the conditions of the world, or the conditions of maybe the cosmic struggle between good and evil, and God and Lucifer. You know, I mean, that's it.
Or just say that's the way we are. That's the way people are.
That's the way people are, and or, you know, what can I do? Everybody's like this. And I guess it's the same thing. That's a way of not taking responsibility. It really is. And I think that's the problem with... I better be careful, because this is going around the world. I think that's one of the problems that comes from religion. I'm not going to say that it's directly related to religion. But when you can start being directed by an external force, you can do all kinds of things in that name. And you can also, when there's such a thing as an evil thing, an evil entity with certain powers, then you can blame that evil thing rather than recognizing whatever I do. Even if that's all true, even if there's such a thing as a good bad and a good God and a bad God, I'm still responsible for what I'm doing. And which means if I can really accept that, then I'm also responsible for my own peace and happiness. How do I do it? Through the Eightfold Path. Great, great class. You know, I'm glad you came tonight.
I feel very fortunate that the first few things that I picked up are all have all taught the same thing, you know, even in different ways, and maybe it's not all, you know, totally clear, but even Bachelor, like Buddhism Without Beliefs, the whole thing is about impermanence and the Eightfold Path and meditation. It's sort of the fundamentals, and I'm lucky to have found writers who write about the same, about Vipassana and mindfulness and about the path.
You are, I am too, that some of Stephen Batchelor's writings were the first that started giving me an idea that maybe there's a different way of looking at these things.
Mm-hmm.
I got to say, his most latest stuff is disappointing, but he seems to be more intent on reconciling all Buddhism again, like most people do. There was one of the most famous suttas is where the Buddha's teaching mindfulness to King Pasenadi, and in his latest book he changes the whole point to say that he was teaching King Pasenadi the most important thing is care, and he's changing the idea of mindfulness to meaning that we should be caring of other people. We certainly should be caring of other people, but the essence and the underlying foundation is mindfulness. And so when you change that important sutta, and his whole premise now seems to be based on the idea of caring for others, which is what a lot of modern Buddhism, again, it sounds so wonderful, but you're missing the point that the reason why you can't be fully caring of others is because of your own ignorance. You have to address that first. And mindfulness, as we're talking about on Saturday's classes, mindfulness is the essence of that. So how can we change that to meaning care? It doesn't even relate anymore. So I don't mean to beat up on Mr. Batchelor.
Yeah.
But again, that to me, that's unfortunate, because his books, Buddhism Without Belief and the other one I can't think of right now, were significant. And just giving me the license that, I can look at things differently than the way that they're always presented in modern Buddhism. And that started opening the door. We're so fortunate that these teachings are still around, and that the suttas have been preserved the way they've been preserved, even though they're still a difficult read. Well, thank you for a great class. Let's finish with the Metta Sutta like we always do. So, again, Kevin, find your relaxed meditative posture. Gently close your eyes and gently close your mouth. And take a moment to become aware of the sensation of breathing in your body. And let that mindfulness of your breath cease any distracting thoughts to the past or to the future, or that may have arisen from our talk tonight. And these are the Buddha's words on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you, Kevin, for a great class.
Thank you, John.
Peace.
Thank you for listening. Please visit crossrivermeditation.com for guided meditations and instruction, and Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos. We rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Please feel free to contact me through crossrivermeditation.com. Peace.